Everybody to Radio Free Nintendo episode 139. It's the Church of the Wii Sunday morning service, and we're so glad to have you here. Praise Reggie! Can I get an amen from the front row?
Hey,
how about
man.
The SD card menu? Woo! Virtual Console Arcade! Yeah, baby, bring it on! Final
Hallelujah! Hallelujah!
I can't even handle it! Oh, I feel so good. I'm so blessed this day.
Blessing.
Oh, boy.
That's right, folks. It's been a good week for Nintendo fans. And we're here to tell you about it and wallow in our glory.
Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah, but first we'll do new business. And try to bring it back down. Let's bring it back down. Let's mellow out. Slow jam.
Slow jam.
Quiet storm.
Slow jam the new business, okay?
Quiet storm.
Quiet storm. Oh, my God. Okay.
Jesus.
All right. Everybody's here, and it's GDC week. James,
Yay!
What you playing?
Thanks for that, John. So, in my 2 weeks of absence, I've actually been rather busy. But so I spent a lot of time, but not a whole lot of money upgrading my computer so I could actually play real games on it again. It's a good feeling. So it's actually quite cheap to upgrade your computer now for some reason. So
are you claiming to be a PC gamer?
I have been in the past.
Oh. You're saying you are now once again.
Yeah, we've covered my exploits in the past.
So we've brought you back into the flock? Is that what you're saying?
But, well, I have a rant that I could go on instead of having to use Steam for games I own physical copies of, but that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is there anything you're doing this to get, like any upcoming game that you're...
Well, I did it because I was having some performance issues playing the demo of Empire Total War, which I'm sure none of you want to hear about. As a full game.
Yeah, I've got a friend at school who has it, and I don't want to hear about it from him either.
Nice.
He keeps trying to strike up conversations about it, and I'm like, dude, I don't give a
fuck. I'll just say to people who are fans of the series up to this point, they did dumb it down a little bit.
Now, is that RTS?
It's the battles are RTS, and the management's turn-based. They did dumb the game down a little bit from previous iterations, which, if you don't like managing all that stuff, it's probably great. If you do like managing all that stuff... like I do, it's kind of depressing. But it's still a good game. It just took me a lot longer to get into than the previous iterations. So I also managed to pick up a copy of GTA Chinatown Wars. I know that Johnny also picked it up. So
yeah, take your time.
Well, my initial thoughts are that the game does feel really small. You know what I mean?
In terms of the map size?
Yeah. Like, it's kind of like the first few hours, you're kind of just banking around like this tiny area. But I can't seem to find any goddamn weapons, short of picking a fight with the police officer and then punching him in the face 10 times.
Have you looked in the dumpsters?
I have, and all I keep finding in them are, like, rotten hot dogs.
So you haven't unlocked the, like, ammunition home delivery service?
I haven't either. I just got that.
Okay. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that, because then, you know, you buy body armor before you go on a mission without having to drive all over the fucking city.
Never find their store, so I was like, well, fuck.
Well, at least they fixed that in the DS game and not, you know, the 360 version, which is really important.
Yeah.
Well, I think, John, you'll find that, I don't know if you have any plans to get Chinatown Wars, but I think they actually do a lot of things to make the gameplay a little more convenient and streamlined.
Yeah.
Like the stuff about how you can get rid of your wanted stars by crashing the police cars.
Yeah.
It makes
nice.
Sense.
Yeah.
And it works, and it makes those chases a lot less stressful.
Sometimes those police cars, for whatever reason, don't crash. Or in some cases, crash randomly into like a parking meter.
Mm-hmm. Well,
if you run over,
it's realistic. I mean, if you're driving a high speed chase,
it's a parking meter.
But you've probably driven them off to the side of the street.
Not always. Sometimes they just crash in on their own.
Well,
it's weird though, because it generally works okay, but sometimes it's really hard to get a police car to just crash. So in that case, it's probably better to just try to run away.
Yeah, I don't think it's meant to be easy, but it does give you another option rather than just running away, because, like, sometimes you just can't really run away. I mean, sometimes you get enough stars and you're just in the wrong part of town
and
maybe you don't know the map well enough, and it's just, you're screwed. You're not going to run away. They will catch you eventually. So I like that they give you this, you know, this option now.
Mm-hmm.
This other out.
I spent
a little bit of time on the drug sales, I don't say minigame, but concept, where basically you're selling drugs to make money, and you get these emails from people who are saying that they've got, you know, a cheap deal on whatever right now. But, I don't know, it's kind of like, if you want to make money, it's a great way of doing it, but it's not really particularly fun, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, great, I get to drive across town to sell ecstasy for a 3,000% profit.
You're saying it's a grind?
Yeah, a little bit.
Hmm. Yeah, you're farther than I am, because I've kind of tasted a couple things like that, you know? Like, I've done one mission where I had to go sell drugs, mm-hmm. but I haven't really gotten to the point where I can just go out and kind of explore and try those things.
Yeah, well, you'll get when you're out in the field, you'll get these emails on you're totally not a BlackBerry, and you'll be like, hey, do you want, you know, I've got cheap whatever until Monday. So you'll go over there and you'll buy whatever he has and immediately go find the next drug dealer, even if he's only like a block away, and make a bajillion dollars. So it's a little easy sometimes.
So what's the main hook with it? I mean, what sets this one apart? Like, what did they change to the formula?
I'm still trying to figure that out, to be honest. You know, I haven't played a lot of the franchise up to now.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely got some things that I heard people were upset about in the other game, like the ability to buy ammo and body armor remotely.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't felt like the game's really got a hook in yet. The story hasn't really gone that far.
Yeah.
So right now, all it is, your uncle is out of good graces with the Triad gang he's a member of. It's basically him bitching about whatever he needs. And then he sends you on some dumbass mission to go steal, like, cars.
Go steal these three cars so the kid of my boss will be happy.
Yeah, so now is the structure... it sounds like the structure is pretty much the same. I mean, is that the case? Because I know, John, you've played the console one.
It seems like it so far.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm really early on, so I don't have a very well-formed opinion of the game so far. But, I mean, I like it. I'm enjoying it so far.
Yeah,
just
it's good.
Games I'm playing.
I just wish that, like, you know, the story missions were moving a little bit faster.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of doing chores, and that's pretty typical of the GTA games. You kind of go to one guy and he's sort of your boss for a while, and you kind of do whatever he tells you to, and then eventually you kind of assert your independence from him and you probably kill him, or at least you leave him in the dust, and then you kind of move on, and then you start doing bitch work for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And sometimes you got two or three people at a time that you can kind of choose,
right? And that's where I am right now. So there's three Triad underbosses who I can be doing work for, but they're all giving you the same shit, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it is going to create missions out of the gameplay that is built into the design of the game. So it's unusual that you play a mission that is radically different from anything you've done before. You know, usually it is go here and kill this guy, then come back, or go and steal this car and then come back, or, you know, go sell some drugs or play this little mini game that we put in. And, you know, really the missions are a way to get you to try all of those things that they bothered to put in the game. And maybe they tell a little bit of story that keeps you engaged. But, I mean, the other part of Grand Theft Auto is once you get to a certain point, which is usually not that far into the game, you always have the option of basically just going off and doing whatever you want to. So if you're not really enjoying the missions they're giving you, you're not supposed to feel obligated to do them. But part of what bothered me about, like, GTA 4, for instance, is that I thought the free-roaming exploration, do-whatever-you-want part wasn't as much fun as it was in the previous games. And so I felt like, you know, the missions were like the right way to play the game. Like, I kind of felt like I was obligated to play those missions, and I didn't like them that much.
Yeah,
so I feel like that they reacted to that kind of strongly here and instead made it so the missions don't really feel like they're that important.
It'll probably change as you go through, but the missions always seem like they're important relative to whatever character you're working for at the time. And you know there will be other characters after that one, so in the grand scheme of things, you know, maybe every now and then you do a mission that's pertinent to your main character's quest for whatever. But most of them will be, you know, you doing chores for people. That's just kind of the way the games are structured. I'm not defending it, but it is, you know, it's consistent, I think, with the series.
Yeah. I think the other issue that I've had so far is that the game looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's probably the best-looking DS game I've played since maybe the Speed Racer game. No, everybody.
Yeah, I know. It just sounds funny.
That game is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And beyond that, it might be Legend of Zelda, which was an amazing looking game.
Yeah, I think it uses cell shading in a way that we haven't seen very much on DS. You know, in that it's using it to render a somewhat believable world, I think. It's not really a cartoonish world. It's based on reality. But they've used the cell shading to kind of get over that problem of, you know, realistic things just not working on DS graphics.
Right.
So it's a very pretty game.
Yes.
I think it's really nice looking. It seems to run pretty well. And in terms of the scale, just to go back to your very first comment, I mean, I haven't gotten to explore the whole city very much, but if the city feels a little smaller due to the perspective change or the pace of the gameplay, to me that's a really good thing, because Liberty City was just too big in the last one. It's like too big and everything looks the same.
See, I think the problem here is that a lot of it does look the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I wander around like, okay, where the fuck am I?
Well, I mean, you know, you will grow to rely on the GPS system more, I'm sure.
Unfortunately, the map's usually out of the way while you're driving. So, you know, you're driving fast, but the map's down there. All right, do I look down or do I run into a wall?
Well, it's actually one of the nice things about Chinatown Wars, I think, is that it uses the two screens of the DS really well, in that it allows it to present more useful information while you're playing the game, so you don't have to stop and pause so much like you do in the consoles. And for instance, in the console games, you always have the little radar and the mini-map down in the corner, but it's so small that it's actually hard for me to see. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem is I've been playing GTA 4 on essentially 480p, and it's not really designed to do that. So the mini-map is extremely small relative to the graphics, and I almost have to sit close to the TVs just to see it, because you depend on it so much.
Yeah.
With the DS, the mini-map is basically the same size as the gameplay, it's just on a separate screen. So it just makes it a little easier to keep up with some of that information.
Yeah, I mean, it's much the same thing, like, even with, like, the Castlevania games, you know, like, I've always liked the fact that you've just got, I mean, especially the more recent ones that don't really use the DS, like, touchscreen or anything, but just the fact that you've got the map there at all times is nice.
Absolutely.
Which is why it would be even nicer if they did a Metroid for DS, but yeah, we could pretty much give up on that.
Have you noticed how terrible the pathfinding is on the map, though?
No.
Yeah, a lot of times
I haven't used it enough, but
yeah, it wants you to follow the traffic laws. So a lot of times it'll tell you to go like all the way down this bridge and come back around and stuff.
Well, yeah, well, it's like that in the console.
It's GPS systems. Yeah,
it's like that in GTA 4 as well.
It behaves like a GPS routing.
Yeah.
So you can always, you know, drive the wrong way on a one-way street and save yourself a little bit of time.
Yeah.
If you can see that the route calls
for
that.
Yeah, it's weird.
Now the map is on the touchscreen, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So how can you do, because I know, you know, Johnny, when you were talking about, you know, you have to press pause, and, you know, in GTA 4, you have to basically pause the map, especially when you want to, you know, map out your route or pick a point on the map. You always have to pause.
Yes.
Now, how do they tackle that in the DS one?
You still have to pause to map out. Because
the map they show you is extremely zoomed in
on
the touchscreen. So when you go in there, it opens the full map.
Okay.
I do feel like, though, that it is a lot of fun just running through people right now. I don't mean like shooting them, just running around, because nobody seems to react in a way that makes, you know, it seems the same. So it's kind of funny just to see how they're going to react when you come running through, firing off into the trees.
Are there any funny sound bites?
Not really.
Yeah.
The audio is kind of subdued.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that made GTA 4 so funny, is because, you know, you would kind of like nudge somebody with your car on the street and they'd be like, holy fucking shit! You know, just completely out of nowhere.
There's some of that.
It's pretty funny.
Like, is that like, yeah, that's the only voice in the game, right?
Yeah, the story is not voiced.
The rest of it's all like storyboarded kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. I think the audio is definitely the weak point of Chinatown Wars.
Yeah, definitely.
Just because it's just not really technically feasible to do the audio the way they do it on the consoles, and that is such a huge part of the experience in the console games.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, there's not much they could have done to get around it. I mean, the music seems okay, but it's not very memorable to me, but, you know, it's because they're not using licensed tracks, so it's just a very different feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, without the voice, the voice of the stories I can kind of do without, because I'd prefer to just kind of be able to get through them faster. Just generally the feel of driving around with talk radio, and it's I think it's going to be harder for them to get across all the satirical elements without that without being able to rely on the audio so much. Because, yeah. again, because the perspective is so almost top-down, you know, maybe three-quarters or seven-eighths view or something like that, because of that, they can't show that much detail on street signs and buildings and
right.
you know,
so they're more
advertisements.
They're more kind of forced for you to figure it out on your own,
mm-hmm.
which can work and most of the time, but sometimes you're like, well, what the hell is that?
All right, well, I think we need to move on. And speaking of games that use both screens a lot, at the same time I got Chinatown Wars, I got Henry Hatsworth, and I've been trading them off quite a bit. I'm also still playing Dragon Quest V, so just I haven't gotten much time with any of them because I've been playing all of them pretty equally this week. But don't have much else to say about Dragon Quest V. It's still pretty much the same. It's good, but it's just the same. And Henry Hatsworth is kind of interesting. You know, it is sort of a Mega Man-esque game on the top screen, and on the bottom screen, it's almost literally Puzzle League. I mean, yeah. it plays exactly the same. You have some different power-ups and things. And that's okay. I'm not really a big fan of Puzzle League. I think it's one of the less entertaining puzzle games that, you know, of the serial ones, the ones that are always around. But I don't hate it. I don't mind playing it as part of Henry Hatsworth. But this promise of like really integral interactions between the two screens and the way the two worlds work together, I've yet to really see that pay off. And I'm still in the first world. I've played through four or five different levels now. And the interaction between the two screens seems to be fairly minimal so far, and maybe it's just that I'm managing the puzzle screen well, because the way it works is you're supposed to kind of play the action part for a while, and then once the puzzle screen starts to fill up or you get low on health or something like that, you push Y and it flips you down to the puzzle screen. So now everything's paused up top and now you're down on the puzzle screen, and you can play it with the D-pad or the stylus. So I've been playing with the D-pad, so I don't have to keep pulling out the stylus and then putting it back up.
Yeah.
But you're moving blocks around there, and you know, Puzzle League or Panel de Pon or whatever you want to call it, Tetris Attack, it's a pretty easy game unless you're concerned with making crazy combos and, like, you know, unless the pieces are moving up really fast. And so far in Henry Hatsworth, the pieces are moving pretty slowly. So basically the pacing for me is that I play the game up top for maybe 60 seconds. Things pile up down below. I switch down there. I clear out almost all the blocks on the screen. And then it's all kind of on a timer. So playing the puzzle game is meant to be like a precious commodity, basically. So you can keep making matches to keep your timer filled up. But eventually the timer runs out as you don't have any more matches to make. And then it forces you to go back up and play the action game more. Basically, with the pacing is that I clear off the puzzle screen, then I go back and play more action stuff, and so...
Yeah, do you kind of just, like, forget about it for quite a while at that point, you know, the bottom screen?
Yeah, I mean, like... it's not that long, because you end up having to do it pretty frequently. In fact, I would say maybe too frequently. Mm-hmm. I would rather play the action game. To me, that's kind of the meat and potatoes. That's what I would rather play. The puzzle game is less interesting, because it's so easy. Whereas the action game is actually surprisingly difficult, even early on. It's pretty challenging.
Yeah, I've heard
that,
which sounds appealing to me. That...
Yeah, I like that. I just wish it would let me play the fucking
game. Because you're concerned with this, like, you know, this sort of mashup kind of thing where you end up incorporating two genres, is maybe you get a kind of dumbed-down version of both. And something similar you're talking about with the puzzle screen, like, being slow and sort of the kind of, you know, almost sounds like that might be the case, but then with the action, apparently it isn't. So that's
right.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So right now it just seems like, you know, I was expecting the two parts of the game to really be more balanced out and really play off of each other in a lot of clever ways. And so far to me, it seems like the action game is much more interesting.
When you say the first world, like, do you have an idea of like what proportion of the game?
By percentage wise, I'm something like 10%. So a lot could change, but like I said, so far I'm surprised at how easy the puzzle stuff is. There could be elements that they just haven't shown me yet, but so far the puzzle thing seems like more of an annoyance that I have to switch over and, you know, take care of this chore every few steps. I still think it's a very interesting game, and I am liking a lot of things about it, but I'm kind of waiting for it to take it to the next level, because so far... you know, it feels like a, it just feels like an experiment so far.
Sure. So. Yeah. The guys that made it from Tiburon, or whether the Madden team or whatever, they've split off now, haven't they? They put out a press release not so long ago.
Yeah.
That they've gone off to form their own team or something. So I don't know
whether
this is the kind of thing they'll be pursuing more now that they're under the sort of out from under the yoke of the Madden Empire.
Well, it's definitely a very un-EA style of game.
Sure.
I mean, it still surprises me that EA put this out. It doesn't feel like their kind of thing. So that's not very shocking to hear that the guys who made it kind of wanted to go off and do their own thing, because I kind of get the idea that maybe they didn't really fit in. And maybe they had to try really hard to get EA to, you know, consider
back
this
it.
As like something that could actually be released.
Yeah, I felt like they weren't getting the support that they really were owed, kind of thing. I could see that.
Maybe, or maybe they just feel like, you know, they don't want to have to climb uphill.
Well,
so,
I mean, we've all heard
so much.
I mean,
next
we've all
time.
Heard the stories about working for EA too, though.
Yeah,
that it's absolutely terrible.
Yeah, Henry Hatsworth seems like such an intensely creative product. From the guys who go over and do Madden and pretty much churn out the same thing every single year.
It's got to come out somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not coming out of Madden.
You can't lump all of Madden, all of EA into EA Tiburon and EA...
No, I'm just saying, I mean, if the guys who made Henry Hatsworth came from the Madden studio and...
They did.
Then I can see how, you know, if they say, like, look, we actually pulled it off. We made Henry Hatsworth. Why should we stick around and do another Madden game when we know we're capable of this?
Yeah.
You know, like, it just seems so much more creatively satisfying to do an original title that people are saying is, like, one of the most ingenious uses of the DS system and et cetera, et cetera. People are comparing it to Mega Man, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that may very well be what happened, is that EA said, okay, guys, you know, Hatsworth was cool and all, but now we're going to put you back on this project. And they're like, yeah, well, we really don't feel like working on that anymore. So, see ya.
Yeah, I can. I don't know if that's the story. We're totally speculating, but it just seems like...
Which is what we do
that's,
here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it just seems like maybe there is that kind of story going on. So maybe we'll get to talk to those guys at some point and find out how it really happened.
Yeah.
But, the only other thing I've been playing this week is Shaun White Road Trip for Wii. And I just rented this and I played it for a few days. That was enough. But
is this the game that was originally called Shaun White Snowboarding?
Yeah. It's just Road Trip is the name of the
Wii
version.
The Wii version, yes. The one that looks like cavemen?
No, not really. I think the graphics are actually really nice on it. I played it with the balance board. I didn't even try it with the controller only thing. I just wasn't interested. I got it because I wanted to play something with balance board. The balance board controls work really well, and they make what otherwise might be a pretty boring game into a pretty fun little, you know, exercise / extreme sports thing. I mean, it ends up feeling similar to SSX, but the level designs are not nearly as interesting. And ultimately, that's why I didn't keep it for longer, because I just felt like, you know, I played through 5 or 6 tracks and, you know, went through a couple of them more than once. But I just felt like, you know, it seems like I've pretty much seen all there is to see. There aren't that many tricks you can do. And the trick system's very simple, and part of that's maybe because you're on the balance board, so you don't.
You're not going to be doing the crazy drawing little hieroglyphics on the screen.
I'm glad, they did not do that.
I think it's
certainly better
fun.
Than that. But yeah, it seems like a fun little thing, and you know, I wouldn't be pissed off if I had bought it, but I'm not sure that how much I really would have played it, just because it just seems like. For a snowboarding game that's all about kind of, snowboarding is, the sport is about sort of exploration, challenging yourself, doing some extreme stuff, and sometimes it's just for you. It's not because you're in a race or anything. It's like you're out there by yourself, or you're out there with one or two friends, and you're going to go out and try something that you've always been scared to do before. And that vibe, and that's what I'm a skier, but that's, you know, the same thing you get from skiing, and I just feel like that vibe wasn't really there. It was more like, okay, here's this little track, go get 2,000 points in tricks.
There's no danger.
Or go down here and try to be first in the race, and it's just not that appealing to me in terms of the way it's structured.
Well, but I mean, you know what I'm saying? That part of the appeal of snowboarding is that it is kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
And that danger really isn't there standing on Wii Balance Board, except the danger of looking like an idiot.
Right, but but James, a game that actually pulls off the danger feeling a lot better is like the 1080 games. They're hard.
Yes.
You know, there is a risk reward. There are multiple paths, and if you take the harder path, you may do better in the race, or you may have more trick opportunities, but it's more difficult. And part of the problem with Shaun White, I think, is just really easy. It's very hard to crash. It's hard to not nail a trick as you land. You automatically jump up on rails, which is a control decision, but it does make it all ends up feeling just a little oversimplified and a little too easy. It's kind of built as more of a casual family game, and you know, that's fine. But it's just not something I want to play 20 hours of.
Now, the GameCube version of 1080 was 1080 Avalanche, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that maybe we'll see a new play control for that?
I was thinking more of like a Wii balance board sequel to it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and maybe they looked at the sales of Avalanche and said, that series can die.
What Johnny's talking about in terms of like, okay, so they'll have like you get on rails automatically because, you know, kind of jumping kind of it might be a bit more complicated with the balance board. Like, it doesn't seem like it'd necessarily be that easy to just like slap balance board control onto a pre-existing design that you would certainly be better off if you did it from scratch.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, Avalanche needs a lot more than just new controls for me to play it again. Mm-hmm. It's just that game was, I basically beat it in 2 hours and felt like there wasn't really anything left for me to do after that time. Whereas the original N64 one, I think it actually is more well-rounded experience. Avalanche is just, you just barrel through it as fast as possible, and then, oh, it's over. You know, it just doesn't really feel like it's a complete experience the way it's all put together. Anyway, Shaun White, yeah, it's a fun game, but a bit slight, I thought. But, there it is. Greg, you got Mad World.
Yeah, nah? Well, so, yeah, I would like to tell you that I have been playing Mad World for the last week.
But you haven't.
Considering I received the game a matter of a few hours, really, after we finished recording last week.
You haven't touched it, have you?
But in fact, I haven't been playing the game because basically, as soon as I got it out of the packaging, put it in the system, I noticed straight away this. The picture looks a bit squashed. What's going on? It's like, I was expecting it to do a little flash, like, because it would check out of 480p, which my system is set to run in by default, because it doesn't have 480p in the North American version. Well, I wasn't expecting for it to then flash and squash down and go to PAL, and then I realised, oh my god, this is a PAL conversion from the mid-1990s.
Oh dear.
There is no way around it. It is actually made very clear on the back of the box, which I was such a optimistic fool, I wouldn't think they would make this game so poorly for the PAL market that I didn't check the fact it doesn't support 60Hz resolution before I got it out of the packaging. And so, yeah, basically this means is that the whole game is squashed out of proportion into these little borders for the whole time. And the refresh rate is lower, so everything's kind of a bit janky. It's a bit like skippy. Like, even if you ever run your Wii in a 50Hz mode, we got PAL Wii, just if you just trace the pointer hand on the Wii menu, you'll see the difference. It's very, very clear. Whereas that hand just moves very smoothly on the 60Hz, you could see it kind of, relatively kind of skipping about on the 50Hz. It's just undeniable. And, Nintendo's, every single one of Nintendo's games has a 60Hz mode. Pretty much every single Wii game on the market, even some of the really
Target
abysmal
Terror
stuff. I have not looked at the back of the box of Target Terror.
Do it just for comparison's sake.
I don't know, maybe I will do it, but I mean, certainly from the reports of everyone that's been looking at this problem and my experience of just looking at Wii games at retail and stuff, they pretty much all run in 60Hz. It's almost unfathomable that one wouldn't at this point. I mean, Sega were doing PAL 60Hz modes in games with the Dreamcast, so it's especially ironic that they, as the publishers of this game, have presided over this travesty at this point.
Well, we had discussed trying to get a comment.
Mm-hmm.
Have we actually gotten anything?
I'm not sure what's happening with that. I'm glad that TYP, as reviews editor, and Neil Ronigan, who reviewed the game, were kind enough to let me work with them and get a note in about it at short notice before it went up. Because the fact is that I got the game on launch day. You know, I had it pre-ordered from an online retailer, and it just happened to show up so quickly that...
that you were the first to find out.
Yeah, I was pretty much like, oh, I wake up in the morning, it's been there in the mail, pick it up, you know, no time to check forums or whatever for someone else that might have...
I've got places to be, I'm going to play this game right now, and what the
And it's... Yeah, so anyway, you know, I wanted to put it in the get it in the review, even though that's obviously for the North American game, because obviously number one, as I have direct experience of, a lot of non-North American people will read our reviews.
Yes,
you know, just because obviously they are generally the same
Nintendo
game.
Nintendo World Report.
Exactly.
Indeed.
And second of all, but all the pre-release reviews fail to pick up on this completely.
Are they playing?
I don't know whether that you're talking about the. I mean, you've got IGN UK. Now, what is the point of IGN UK?
So they can give everything a 0.5 review higher than
it reviews the game on the same day as the American site and fails to pick up on the one notable difference that there is between the versions. It's like, what is the point of its existence if it is just pure duplication? And it won't even pick up on these
things. Edge typically does import games, doesn't it?
Yes.
But Edge would give that game a 9 because it was edgy enough to not upgrade its graphics system.
Yes.
Yeah, it dares to bore you.
Edge is sort of the Pitchfork media of gaming, isn't it?
But, you know, the point is, like, with the print magazine, I can accept it because it kind of behooves them to use the import version because they need the extra time, right?
Yeah, right.
But IGN UK, really? I mean, I can only assume they were playing the North American version, and that's why this has happened. But even subsequent reviews, even now, on most websites, this is not something that's being talked about. Mostly just on forums, and people have realised this problem. And it's such a shame in the sense that there is perhaps no game on the Wii that is more leveraged on its visual style than this game. And you're talking about playing the entire thing squashed out of proportion with the frame rate cut by a sixth. I mean,
so for you, it's unplayable.
For me, it is unacceptable. Now, for a lot of people, they may well
Are
be
you
able
planning
to play.
Return it, or
it's already done.
Okay, and you can't get it for your Japanese Wii, can you?
The Japanese, yes, that's the kicker. Is that I have a Japanese Wii, but there are no plans to release it in Japan, so I'm not going to be able to play it that way.
You're gonna have to get an American Wii.
Yeah,
you're
gonna
have
to complete the set, and then then at that point you just say, "Oh bugger it, let's just get the Korean one." I mean, why not? At that point,
that's right
as well.
That's a good idea. Yeah, the Asian, the so-called Asian version, maybe.
Yeah, but you know, the point is that, you know, for me, this is just something that I can't tolerate. And it's not so much about the outrage grounds or whatever, but it is ridiculous. It's such an anomaly at this point. But it's just, a game like this, that's so about the style, I don't want to experience it this
way. Yeah, it doesn't make
maybe
sense.
One day, I mean, obviously with the freeloader out of commission and all that, but maybe one day I'll play the North American version. I'll have a way. Maybe I'll get a North American Wii, you know, years down the line. I'd rather play it years down the line the way it was intended than play it now like this. Now, other people may well feel differently, and they could still enjoy it. If they still enjoy it, good for them. They are brilliant. I hope they do. But for me, it's just intolerable. So it's already done, already traded away. I put it towards deals on Henry Hatsworth and Final Fantasy IV. So they're
nice.
On the way.
Congratulations on your purchases there. Now, since you mentioned the freeloader, we haven't really heard you talk about that in a long time. Is the freeloader just totally...
Oh, no, that
point.
Was killed back in October.
Yeah, that's been going for a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
I knew there was a battle for a while, and they were trying to update it as the new system firmware is came out.
Yeah, there was, you know, and I think really when you got to that point, I think it was 3.3 or whatever, and, you know, like you got to a point where I think the shop channel required you to have 3.3 and all that was pretty much the definitive stake through the heart for the freeloader. I mean, there are other ways. For some people who are willing to explore those, I suppose there's that option as well for playing Mad World on the North American version. So, you know, if you really care about this sort of stuff, maybe you will do that. But it's just such a shame. It's unfathomable to me. It raises questions about, like, why doesn't it have 480p in North America? And then there's this, like, you know, it seems like a bit of a coincidence.
That's a very good question.
Yeah. You know, like, is it something about the way the game game runs? Is it something fundamental that they just, it was more difficult than you would think? Because certainly from what you hear, it doesn't sound like much more than a trivial exercise to put in 480p or to put in a 60 hertz mode if you're talking about a PAL.
Well, you know, because it's funny, because when it originally was, when the Wii originally started coming out, developers were talking about how easy it is to put in a 480p mode. Wasn't there an interview that said it would take like an afternoon to do it?
Yeah, it seems to me like a complete oversight, and I wonder if it might have something to do with it being the studio's first game.
but maybe. That's where the publisher's supposed to step in.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, quality control. I mean, you that's know, right. let's do well, your job here. But, you know.
The other thing I wonder is if it might have been some kind of technical bug. You know, it just reminds me of the whole Guitar Hero 3 mono issue.
Yeah,
Activision,
you do get inexplicable things sometimes, don't you? I mean,
sure.
Really,
and you know, Activision, to their credit, they fixed that problem. And even Capcom with the Okami Wii IGN logo snafu on the cover, they corrected that.
Well,
eventually.
I mean, that's what's sad though, that this is getting so little play. You know, I mean, even for these sites, like, okay, so you reviewed the North American game, couldn't be helped, whatever. You know, cover it afterwards. People aren't covering this. I mean, you know, it's just not there.
I just wonder if there's a chance for Capcom to fix this. I mean, for Sega to not Capcom, Sega to fix it.
My point of view was, I would get what I can for it now, because it may come out and it may bomb. And in fact, it did debut at number 34 in the all formats chart. So I thought, get what you can for it now, because you might not be able to get much for it later. I think it's unlikely that there will be a remedy to this.
Well, you probably shouldn't hold your breath for a fixed version, because Sega has yet to fix any of their Sonic games.
Yeah, and
well, you can't fix something that's fundamentally broken.
Furthermore, it's not Guitar Hero, so the money is not in it to even do that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, especially if the sales are soft. I mean, which it appears they are.
All right. Well, John, do you have any new business this week?
Not much. I've been playing this. Well, I've been playing this game called Find a Job. It's difficult.
When did that come out?
There is a game called Job Island by Hudson, John, if you're interested.
Yeah,
maybe write up a review for the site.
There's also
and
one called
also...
Take a Shit.
Yeah.
No, this is called Don't Shit in Your Pants.
Yes.
And when you load it up, it's a Flash game, and when you load it up, the first thing you should type in, because it's like a text adventure, the first thing you should type in is shit pants.
And it goes, great, you failed.
It has basically achievements for all the distinct endings, the way it
is
can...
Is that how you get the bad ending?
It's not necessarily a bad ending.
It probably feels pretty good, actually. I mean, you know.
It is an ending.
Because I understand, you know, playing these minigame collections is how one acquires transferable skills in the labor market. So,
indeed.
I think that could be a wise... I mean, very prescient of them, given the current economic situation, to release this game. I think
don't shit your pants. Or do you mean Job Island?
Job Island.
Funnily enough, I was not talking about transferable skills with relation to bodily functions.
Hey, that could be a transferable skill, I don't know.
It's not helping me in my job hunt, I can tell you that. Let's see. In terms of gaming, I did finish up my Trackmania review, which I think is probably a record in terms of me actually getting a review done.
That was really fast.
Congratulations.
Of course, there's not a lot to actually review in the game.
I was holding out hope for Spiderwick 2 there, but it's not quite.
Never again.
We still got some left on the docket.
Oh, there's a couple. There's a couple.
I'm actually holding out hope there is a Spiderwick 2.
There's probably several, actually, right now.
So, John, what do you think will be your next review?
My next
Is that still forthcoming?
Well, let's see what I got here in the little pile. Let's see. Age of Empires has to get done, and Lion Rider, Lion Rider should be... I'm not even going to say it. Those are the reviews.
Don't.
John, just to point out, Lion Rider 2 is out now, and it's already been discounted.
That is the one.
That is actually, Lion Rider 2.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
But isn't it terrible, John?
Yes, it is terrible. It actually...
Isn't it terrible, John? Man, what's up with that game, John?
No,
it's just straight out terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, the thing, when I played it a while back, it's hilarious because it actually... Thank God they put you know, skipping ahead to the GDC stuff just for a moment. Thank goodness they put the fridge cleaning stuff in there, because this thing is the biggest, well, it's
the greatest.
It's suboptimal, let's just say that, and it creates like 126 block save file, I think, on your Wii.
Wow.
And it's a flash game, effectively.
Yeah, it is a flash game.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, you can play it for free.
Yeah.
In your web browser.
Mm-hmm.
Using Flash. Mm. Without 128 blocks.
Yeah.
In fact, the Flash game might be Wii compatible.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
No, it is. Yeah. Yeah, you can go. You can load up your internet channel and
Play the Wii version. Play the Flash version of it on Wii. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. I remember when I used to spend a fair bit of time playing Flash games on the internet channel back when I had absolutely nothing to play on the Wii. the sheer novelty of that was like, that was the game I was currently playing on Wii. It was like, oh, I'm playing Flash games over the browser because there aren't any games to buy.
So when was this,
any good games?
Like last summer?
Early 2007.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, yeah, early 2007 was ugly.
It was the entire second half of 2008. What?
Not so much there. I've just mainly played Xbox stuff. This was before I had an Xbox.
Exactly.
Okay, well, that's going to conclude our new business, and we're actually going to jump into a few listener mails here. The well's getting a bit dry, so we would definitely appreciate everybody sending in your interesting questions. And actually, we've gotten a couple of things that we really can't read on the air or don't want to read on the air.
So keep sending them.
I'm not going to sing, all right? Let me just throw that out there.
Yeah, just to comment on that again, John, since I wasn't here when it happened, never again.
Yeah, it was...
It's not even that. No, actually, what I wanted to say is please don't send in political comments or political questions, because we're not going to read them on the air. So just, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, and moreover, we don't even take the death threat seriously. We're definitely not going to read them. So,
see, I actually think that we should consider those as serious threats, because you never know.
Yeah. No. John? Almost any other topic is fine. We do appreciate the emails. You can send them to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And so anyway, the people who sent emails to that address include
Plugabugs with a Z, who writes, some ISPs have started the practice of throttling bandwidth connections, which makes online gaming more difficult, or charging megabucks for going over an unspecific fair limit. With this generation, all three consoles have online activities, but don't make any mention of something like this, which can ruin it. Should the console makers make this clearer when they're getting into online activities?
Mm.
Well, I think this is going to be a bigger issue with, was it On Live?
That'd be a pretty huge issue. It's like streaming HD stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
this will be a big issue with On Live in that it will never come out. But if it did come out, this would be a big reason for them to decide not to put it out.
Well, and also, I mean, you know, we talked last week about, you know, advances in distribution, putting bigger games digitally distributed. These kinds of practices really put a crimp in that, because it's like, you could be faced with, like, he's kind of talking about these, like, ill-defined kind of things that you've got over, he's talking from a British point of view, Plugabugs, actually, where you kind of have these so-called fair use limits. It's not necessarily like it's this many gigs that you can,
right.
Like, it's kind of vague, and at which point, you know, people may feel like, you know, a bit sort of trepidatious about downloading like some big game off PSN or whatever.
So is the idea that you can't use more bandwidth than you're kind of
Then your arbitrary amount they deem is fair for you to be using?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's the, if you have a hard download limit, that's one thing, and it may be restrictive, but you can kind of budget for it, right?
Yeah.
Whereas what he's talking about is sort of vague, it's ill-defined, and people find themselves in a situation they don't know what's going to step over the line. Like, you know, if I stream this video service, for instance, or I play this online game, or I download this game, like, you know, am I putting myself at risk of, like, basically being hit with charges that are, like, you know, sort of predatory almost?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think in the US, it's more this throttling idea. I haven't heard of any, like extra charges, but I do know that they're slowing down people's connections who they deem are basically using an unproportional or disproportionate
not with Fios.
amount yeah. of the thing. Well, yeah, well, Fios is maybe a different story. But even in the U.S., and maybe it's different in England, but in the U.S., we're talking about people who are using 50 terabytes a month. And so these policies are basically aimed at people who have like multiple computers running BitTorrent 24 hours a day the entire month.
Yeah, see, I mean, that's the thing, you know, I mean, I think the problem here is the lack of transparency, because perhaps in the vast majority of cases, that is all they're referring to. And that's kind of why it's ill-defined, because it's these crazy people on the upper end.
But they don't come out and say that.
If they don't and the point is, he's saying, you know, should the console makers, it's like, well, no, it's not up to them to make ISPs policies transparent.
Right, and I'm sure they're pretty much already covered in the terms of service.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're covered, but...
Is it a problem for them in terms of people being afraid to download games? Yeah, it could
be. Absolutely. I mean, you know, like, I mean, it may, you know, perhaps, like, they might be useful for them to provide advice or something if it's really a problem. But at the end of the day, like I said, you know, it's up to the ISPs to make their own policies and to provide information on them. And you know, if people don't like the the absence of disclosure, then they should get their service from someone else. I mean,
I know with Comcast, they recently, I think actually last October, they capped it at 250 gigs a month. So, which
250
is
gigs
a lot.
It's not that huge of a number, I mean, in this day and age.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I guess, like, if you're streaming HD stuff, like, like Netflix or whatever, mm-hmm. I mean, like, yeah, how quickly does that, like, I have no idea of the figures, really.
That's 3 to 4
gig.
That might be as many as 3 to 4 gigs a movie.
Yeah. So, it would still be very heavy usage, but it's not like you're just running things in the background.
It's not like completely flagrant like craziness. It's actually like somewhat feasible that you could. Right. I think though we'll probably see. Obviously, there's advancements in terms of better, faster internet. You know, being proliferated more widely. Mm-hmm. It's certainly here and in America as well. But you know, as there's more and more of a drive towards, you know, money-making opportunities, whether it be, you know, on-demand stuff, you know, for films and TV, and, you know, HD obviously requires more information, and then we've got more digital distribution of games. It's all coming, and the internet, you know, the internet providers are going to have to get on board with that. You know, the goalposts for what is fair usage, in quotation marks, have to move. Mm-hmm. Because it isn't just going to be crazy people with BitTorrent running all the time anymore.
What could be fair usage will continue to shift as technology shifts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think what it'll also come down to is these unlimited plans are going to have to be redefined, because obviously already they're not truly unlimited. And I think what's going to end up happening is the ISPs are going to have to be a little more upfront with, you know, well, you're basically paying for up to 250 gigs a month. If you go over that, we'll charge you a different fee. If you think you might go over that, here's this unlimited plus plan or whatever that where you can budget for a
You've
margin
got to think
over
at
that,
some point, you know? They will identify, like, there are people out there that want to stream all this stuff, they want to play all these games, they want to download all these games, they've got a demand, we'll create a plan for that market, and, you know, sell it direct to them, and then, you know, it'll sort itself out. Yeah. But, you know, it will be a process, and obviously just the sheer physical constraint of how good the connections are kind of something of a roadblock in that.
I think the way they do it now, where, you know, in terms of broadband, they charge you more for a plan that gives you faster access, I think that will go away because it doesn't really make sense. I mean, feasibly, there's probably not any reason why they couldn't give everybody the maximum speed.
Yeah.
They're just intentionally choking it off for people.
It's price discrimination. It's just
exactly
getting people that are willing to pay more to pay more.
Yeah, I think it's more a case. I think the more fair way to do it, and what the market will eventually drive it towards, is the people who actually use the internet more will be willing to pay for it more. You know, if I'm doing all this stuff and watching, I'm streaming HD movies and I'm buying giant 50 gig PS3 games over my network, it's worth it to me to pay $60 a month so that I don't have to worry about the bandwidth that I'm using.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on and talk about games a little more.
All right. Adolf Vega in Denton, Texas writes, "Okay, I'm very happy about the SD card solution for the Wii. I don't have to clean up my fridge anymore. Thank God. Now DSi also has SD card support." So in capitals, huge yelling capitals. "So why can't I play Virtual Console games on DSi, SNES, NES, Neo Geo, Sega Genesis, Sega Master System, TG-16, and Commodore 64 can all be emulated with DSi hardware. Why, capitals again, doesn't the DSi play Virtual Console Wii games? I understand N64 games would be difficult for the DS to handle, but the rest should be fine.
Because Nintendo doesn't want you putting your games on on SD cards with the intent of playing them off the SD card.
Yeah.
Because Nintendo likes money. That's why.
Yeah. Well, because it's always tied to your system.
Right. The minute they unlock the systems, suddenly your DS is now the source of all your pirated games.
Because you don't have like an account where you can necessarily transfer your games over or something to a different Wii. It's tied to that physical console.
In fact, the only way you can is if your Wii fails, you send it to Nintendo and they send you a new one.
They have some sort of accommodation for that,
right?
I guess.
Yeah, they do. That's the
only. But obviously they're controlling that very strictly because it's at their end. So I guess they're all they'll facilitate that. But more broadly than that, it's it's tied to your Wii. That's it.
The elegance of the SD card menu that has now been added to Wii gives me hope that the DSi with its upgradable firmware will get something similarly useful, similarly functional early on in its lifetime. Because as we know now, the SD card on the DSi is still pretty much locked up and worthless the same way it has been on Wii up until
I guess it's mostly
recently.
Just for the camera at this point, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
to put your pictures on there. But of course, they are massive. You will need several gigs to store all those pictures.
Yes. Yeah. We're talking NASA-quality cameras here.
That the idea of a virtual console on DSi is probably attractive to Nintendo as well, because obviously it's a potential revenue
source.
We've
heard rumors about that, and not just that sounds like a good idea kind of rumors, but somewhat more substantiated rumors.
Yeah, it seems to me. Whether it will be restricted to just the originally handheld platform.
Right, and that's what the rumor is to this point.
That
is
makes more sense to me.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense, the handheld stuff. I mean, that makes too much sense for it to not happen. It's going to happen.
Yes, but remember, it makes too much sense for it to not happen means Nintendo won't do it.
Yeah, well, we say that, but it's like with the SD card thing. It made too much sense it had to be opened up, but it did take 2.5 years. Yeah, so maybe that's how long we'll have to wait for.
I guarantee in 2.5 years we'll be on the next DS after DS.
Yeah, definitely.
Just be patient.
But I mean,
8 years
so downloading old Game Boy games like Metroid 2: Return of Samus. Is not really what Edoff's asking about. He's asking, why can't I just move all my Virtual Console stuff over and play it on DSi? And I think there are two reasons. Number one, it doesn't make Nintendo money.
Mm-hmm.
At least they probably don't see it as a money-making thing. I will say, if you could do that, I would buy a DSi in a heartbeat.
Yes.
That's probably the only thing that would convince me to buy a DSi.
What about, because DSi has better wireless stuff, apparently, than the predecessors, so, why can't... Wouldn't it be nice if they could do something like Remote Play? Wouldn't the PSN does? Huh? That would be really cool.
Because
then you're still playing it off that console. Mm-hmm. So
that hasn't sold a single PSP.
I guess this is the issue, but you know what I mean, in the sense that would be, we talk about the obviously they're restrictive and they want to keep it on the Wii, when you're playing stuff off the SD card, you're not really playing it off the SD card so much as it sort of transfers over and the Wii caches it, because you have to have blocks free to do it, and then it plays on your Wii. So, obviously, doing that with the DS doesn't work the same way. But if it was actually really playing off your Wii, but you're just kind of streaming it to your DS, then maybe you could do it that way. But you're right.
Maybe.
I mean, they're not going to do it. I'm just saying that's more feasible to me.
Say that the method that they do with the SD card menu on Wii, it could be done on DSi, because DSi has its own internal flash memory.
Which is only about half of the Wii. It's like 256 as opposed to 512.
I thought it was the same size.
No, I think it's 256 as opposed to 512.
It is smaller.
Okay, well, if it's
smaller,
then that...
It's not that much smaller.
Yeah. So, maybe... I don't know. I mean, it just seems like technically there's really no reason why DSi couldn't use the same kind of system as the SD card menu. I think the bigger problem may be the emulation. The emulators may not run on DSi hardware.
Yeah, that's the thing. You've got to rework all the emulators.
Oh, yeah.
And therefore, as you say, why are you going to go to that cost for something that doesn't make you any? It doesn't actually make you money. It actually costs them.
Yeah,
so yeah, right.
You're definitely not going to do that.
The other thing I think is that the reason that they wouldn't allow you to do this is because if they ever did it, they would make it so that you basically had to repurchase your Virtual Console games to play them on DSi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and part of that's because they would have to recode all the emulators. And
right.
But does anybody really want that? I mean, do you want
to clone
the entire Virtual Console library for DSi and make everybody pay for them again? Like, I just don't see the market being that strong.
Well, you know,
it's funny because
a lot of the games on there that I bought, I've already bought once before anyway.
I get that. And don't never underestimate Nintendo's ability to charge you multiple times for the same thing.
Yeah.
But I just don't really see that happening just because I don't think there's that much market for it.
No, and I mean, they've got plenty to concentrate on in terms of downloadable stuff with the DSiWare and then the handheld you know, stuff that has not been digitally distributed before. So, you know, that will be their focus.
I think that makes so much more sense to do it that way.
The portable games, is that confirmed?
No, it's not confirmed. But again, as we said before, it kind of makes too much sense for it to not happen.
But
so it will happen. It's just a question of when. It seems like they kind of want to give DSiWare breathing room to kind of let it define the DSi.
We need to get all those awesome home use tools like the cooking ones and stuff.
Yeah, calculators, clocks.
Calculators, that's the best one.
Yeah, there's plenty of that stuff. But you know what I mean. I think they want to... They don't necessarily want it to be like, this is all about old games straight away. Like, I think they want to kind of emphasize the new stuff first, and then that'll come. It'll come, I'm sure of it.
All right, well, Greg has the last question here.
I have the last one. Sophia writes, what is the greatest disappointment you've encountered related to gaming? Whether it was a game that you were extremely hyped for that thoroughly disappointed you, or perhaps something else, maybe the end of a game that ruined the overall experience for you. So, yeah, I don't think this is really something we've covered that much before. Like, you know, stuff that we were really, really broken up about how bad it was in the end.
Well, 1080 Avalanche was...
But with something like that, because often, like, I don't know, the way I purchase games is quite conservative, you know, import gaming and all that. You know, I tend to bide my time normally. And, you know, once you catch wind of the reviews and stuff, that kind of breaks the disappointment a bit in terms of, like, you get that advance warning, so you either don't buy it, or you do buy it, but you're still kind of, your expectations have already been lowered. So, like, is there a case?
This is where I'm in an unusual position because I reviewed so many
games.
Exactly.
That's what I was going to say. Is there a case where you're reviewing a game and it's like you just walked into the buzzsaw? Like, of just like, God, this is terrible. I wasn't expecting that at all.
Yeah, it's like you play it for 5 minutes at E3 and you think, oh, this is really fun. And then you get it a week before it comes out. That's generous with Nintendo, but maybe a week. and you play through it and you're just like, wow, I can't believe that, you know, this is so underwhelming. And nobody warned me because nobody else has played it really up to that point.
It wasn't a bad game, but in fact, I quite enjoyed the game. But I actually was disappointed with Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess.
Really?
I thought that would come up.
Yeah, I feel like that game is underwhelming.
So, yeah, is there a specific sense that you
would characterize that? There was a lack of a series of wow moments. There was one
just very rote.
Yes, there was one wow moment. And can you guess? You should be able to guess which dungeon was the one where I went, whoa, okay. It was the Temple of Time.
And the fact
that when you walked through, suddenly you realized, oh my god, I just went back in time of this ruin.
That was neat. Yes, very lovely.
That was the only real wow moment for me in that game.
Yeah, for me, that was really the game where I was like, okay, they're starting to do this the same way every time. It just started to feel very... It's like I've seen this so many times before. It's just very formulaic and kind of just...
Yeah, again, I mean, expectations, as we've talked about on previous episodes, especially the one we did with Carl a while back, you know, are crucial. And, I mean, for me, that's all I was expecting, so it didn't disappoint me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, too. I wasn't really disappointed.
If I was going to go with big stuff, like, you know, that's like, I guess, like, a couple of things, like, the fact that I remember being quite thoroughly disappointed that the very final boss of Super Mario 64 was the same thing again. I was kind of holding out hope that the very final boss would actually be different, but he wasn't. Not substantively, you know, just, yeah, the arena got smaller this time. Brilliant. And then the other thing is I was quite confounded when in Wind Waker, when you have to get the third pearl before the Tower of the Gods, that you just get it, that there isn't a dungeon. That was mind-blowing. It was like, what? You know, you have to find Jabun or whatever.
I always felt like they must just ran out of time.
Oh, yeah, sure, but I wasn't expecting that. I mean, it's like, okay, here we go, very much the same as Ocarina of Time, and or even Link to the Past before that with the pendants and the things for the pedestal of time or whatever, and it's like, okay, got Forest One, Fire One, Water One's coming, right, and then it's like, no, there it is. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
It just felt like I'd been sort of cheated out of a dungeon.
Can I interest you in this pearl?
That was genuinely shocking.
This is the time-to-market pressure pearl. Please have it. There you go.
This is a valuable artifact of an ancient civilization. It's completely beyond putting worth on. Here you go. Here you go, young child in a talking boat.
Yeah, and don't. I think, as I recall, when you play it the first time, the two characters, the King of Red Lions and Jabun, actually speak that ancient language that you can't understand.
Yes, they do.
So you don't even know really why you're just getting the pearl.
Here's your pearl, bitch!
Like, when you play it through the second time, when he's wearing his pyjamas or whatever, you can actually understand what's being said, and then, like...
Oh, really?
At least you'll get... No, it's true. And then at least you're getting a bit more narrative alongside this unexpected, like, yeah, just go on, bugger off, you've got it.
Maybe it was Link's birthday. It was Link's birthday.
It was.
It was. See, that's why you got the pearl.
So, yeah, I mean, those are kind of moments rather than, like, overall games. I mean, as prospects, like, Yoshi's Story was a disappointment to me.
Well, that's not surprising.
I didn't play it. I purchased it many years later for a very, very low price. But, you know, at the time it was like, oh, wow, you know, it's like Yoshi's Island 2. And then, of course, like, when the reviews come in, it's like, no, it's very easy and it's very different. And that was a disappointment to me. And a Warrior World, you know, sort of just being a sort of simple brawler. So, you know, it's sort of like Treasure, Warrior game, sounds great.
Oh, yeah.
I did buy it and I did enjoy it for what it was. But in terms of, like, what you thought it could have been in the beginning, it's like, eh. Bit of it, yeah, it's quite a disappointment.
I think for me, I'm kind of looking through my list of reviews here to jog my memory, but Sam & Max for Wii was a big disappointment for me, because I thought that would be a really great fit for the system, and I thought that I would really enjoy playing it, and the humor ended up being really kind of lacking for me. I just thought it was very pedestrian, the writing and everything. And the execution technically on Wii is so bad that it just becomes sort of annoying to play, even if you do like the game. So that, on multiple fronts, that was a kind of a disappointment for me. Spider-Man 3 on Wii, but, you know, I like Spider-Man 2 quite a lot, and it's certainly not a perfect game, but it was ambitious. And Spider-Man 3, the follow-up, especially the Wii version, is really pretty bad, and
famous for being on broken pixels at this point, right?
Right.
Pretty much all I can think of.
Most expensively produced game ever put on broken pixels, I think. But oh god, Rogue Squadron 3.
Yeah, on foot missions.
So yeah, to what extent were you unprepared for the sheer suckiness of some of those bits, or
The first two Rogue Squadrons were so incredible.
Oh, they're really good, yeah. But, I mean, had you played, like, the on-foot bits before, so you kind of knew what you were getting into, or was it, like...
No, you know, I don't think I had. I don't think I had played those. And the funny thing is, there were some on-foot bits in the Clone Wars game that came out maybe a year before, and that was developed by Pandemic. And that game was definitely
better,
less ambitious, less polished than the Rogue Squadron series. But it was fun. And the on-foot parts, I thought, were pretty fun. And then you play them in Rebel Strike, and it's just like, holy crap,
well,
these are a mess.
It's almost like the characters in Rebel Strike still control, like, vehicles.
Yeah. Dude, and the level designs are atrocious. It's buggy. There's just so many things wrong with
that
game.
It's not just that, though. It was any time you're on the ground in that game was just not good.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because that team had made an N64 game, Battle for Naboo, that had significant.
There was a lot of tanks in that, right?
There were a lot of tanks. Yes. Yeah. And it worked reasonably well.
Mm.
but they like lost their mind when Rogue Squadron.
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose you could. They somewhat made up for it for the fact they had like all of Rogue Squadron 2 as co-op or whatever.
Yes.
Which, you know, that was with a new game, whereas Resident Evil 5 is just that. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean,
yeah. It's a really good package overall. The presentation is nice, and, you know, there are a lot of good things about Rogue Squadron 3, but they dilute the gameplay so much with a bunch of crap that you don't really want to do, and then it just is not as much fun.
And, of course, I mean, you're going to have really high expectations for
that. You mean
that,
like Star
because,
Fox
like you said,
Adventures?
The other ones are really, really good.
That could be a big disappointment for people.
Well, no, I mean,
yeah,
the fact
sure.
that they dilute the game with a bunch of crap you don't want to do.
Oh, yeah. So another game that was definitely a big disappointment for me that I, you know, hadn't heard much about before because I was reviewing it was Trauma Center Under the Knife 2 on DS that came out last year. And it's just, it's not
the
a bad game,
thing.
But it's just exactly the same as the ones before it. I mean, they don't even pretend to do anything new. And it's actually a pretty significant step back from the Wii game, New Blood. In terms of, you know, they had to scale back on a lot of features. And it's like, you know, I kind of was excited about it returning to DS because I thought they can do a lot of things on DS that you can't do on Wii.
Yeah, it's more immediate, isn't it? You know, the controls.
It just didn't take advantage of any of that, you know? So it's just, it's almost literally a remake of the first one. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really lame. And a series that I like a lot, but it feels like very quickly it just kind of ground to a halt. So that's too bad. All right, well, I guess that's going to wrap up our listener mail. So now we're going to take a break, and on the other side, we're going to get really
Wasted.
Positive and optimistic and excited about Nintendo, because we're talking about the GDC news, Iwata's keynote, and other stuff. We're back with your GDC news. That's the Game Developers Conference going
Holy
on
God.
Going on this past week in San Francisco. And Iwata.
Question.
Yeah?
Did they mix up their presentations for E3 08 and GDC 09?
You know, I don't think this would have been satisfactory.
It
as
would have
E3.
Been a hell of a lot better.
It would have been better.
But it's like,
but I still think we would have left there thinking, is that all? Where were the Wii games? It was structured differently. I mean, there you know, he had some announcements to make, but this was not the kind of thing you would want at E3.
Well,
you know?
It would have been better.
And then,
than
of course,
got.
You know, that's, I mean, it's not the purpose of GDC, certainly, to do things like that.
No, it's not.
But he,
which is a weird point.
Knew he was going to do something.
Yeah,
because
of course. Yeah. He's got the
he's
keynote,
got the,
you know,
he's got the podium, and he's going to make Nintendo look good, and he really did. So, Satoru Iwata, the president of Nintendo Company Limited, he gave the keynote at GDC on Wednesday, and you know, he talked for a few minutes about Miyamoto and the development and some upward spiral bullshit and upending the tea table and yada yada yada, and then he got to the good stuff, and it was really good stuff. So we're gonna go through these one by one, but the biggest news, maybe especially for really hardcore Nintendo fans, is this SD card channel that's included with Wii Menu 4.0. And I don't even remember what the updates were in 2.0 or 3.0 because
they weren't,
you know, the
major.
Wii,
They just didn't
matter. Yeah, I mean, the Wii menu hasn't changed that much since
when it went
now.
To 3.0, you got a digital clock.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember the clock. Yeah.
What did
I
remember we had it was a bar to be broken, wasn't it? That was quite a standard.
Well, anyway, we now have the long-awaited storage solution, very long-awaited, and I mean, the consensus seems to be that it's pretty awesome. You click on the SD card and it brings up all the games that you've got on your SD card, and you just click on one and it basically plays. Mm-hmm. So it's using this image file basically in the flash memory on the system, but it overwrites that the next time you play a different game. So it's not basically you can use, you know, up to whatever the maximum size is, like 350 blocks or whatever on your Wii system, and as long as you keep that much free, you can play anything.
Anything that would be on your SD card.
So in reality, is it moving things to the Wii, sort of behind?
It's copying them. It's copying the file to the Wii.
Yeah. Now, but I remember it used to be really slow to transfer stuff to the SD card.
Back in January, they did that update, which was kind of the interim step where they dramatically increased the transfer speed to and from the SD card. And so once they had that in place, now they can do the whole image file swapping thing because it's fast enough that it actually works and makes sense.
Yeah, it's palatable. I mean, that's where we are now. And of course, they also bumped it up so you could actually support the high capacity SD cards.
That's
which
right.
means you could, with up to 32 gigs of storage. I mean,
God, what would you do with 32 gigs?
Download every single thing on the Wii Shop channel.
Photo channel, hello. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's good that they do that because you might already own a 32 gig SD card for maybe your digital camera. And you just couldn't use it with Wii, so you might have to have two different SD cards, which is ridiculous. So I think that's the main reason. It's not that you would ever really need 32
gigs.
Well,
I plan on filling that SD card.
Oh, yeah. It's a big internet, folks. Remember that.
I could fill up a couple gigs with everything I've downloaded. I'm a pretty heavy user. So I'm actually thinking about getting a new SD card that with a little more capacity, because the one I've got is a 2 gig. And that's fine. I mean, I could certainly cull it down so that everything fit on there, and I just, you know, would have it still an amazing selection when I load it up. But the problem is, loading up the SD card menu takes about 45 seconds with my current SD card.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just really fucking slow, and how long does it take for you guys?
They pop in game by game. You just see them.
Really?
Yep. But it's not quick. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's not quick.
Yeah, okay.
You have to sit there and watch them all pop in.
I mean, I guess mine's probably pretty similar to yours, John. It's 2 gigs as well. I mean, maybe it's a little shorter, but yeah. I mean, it's in the ballpark. I didn't time it or anything.
I've not tried it yet.
I updated my Japanese Wii and PAL Wiis. But I haven't really got a need for like the Japanese one yet. That's not full. Although I'm buying a lot of stuff, so we'll get there. But of course, like WiiWare is going to be the thing that'll fill things up far quicker. If there's a constant stream of, because that's the thing with Johnny, you must have way more WiiWare games than I've ever had.
So, yeah, probably. I've got probably 10 WiiWare games.
Whereas I've got a handful like Mega Man 9, Cubello, World of Goo, a couple other stuff, you know, not much. So, and hopefully, I mean, this is the interesting question though. Will this see, like, do you think they'll raise the limit at all, like from the 40 megs or whatever it is?
Yeah, I think they will. I think they will. It just makes too much sense to do it now.
Well, here's another one for you. What's this going to mean for DLC on the Wii? Are we think we'll see more of it now?
Not that much, because this is basically what Guitar Hero is already doing.
Right.
So it's already caching the data. It's using a swap file. So this is just kind of taking the Guitar Hero idea and applying it to all your channels. You know?
I'm just curious if you think we'll see more publishers willing to do it now because they don't have to.
Yeah, well, I guess the thing is that, you know, there's nowhere to hide now in terms of, oh, the Wii doesn't really do it. You know, it's like, I mean, they didn't tuck it away. I mean, that little SD icon is like on the front, you know, the front sort of page, like, you know, on the menu. So it's right there, it's prominent. And, you know, so maybe more people will be sort of cognizant of the fact that there is an SD card slot and you can do stuff with it.
And they can't even go so far as to say that, well, not everybody's going to have it because not everybody has a hard drive on the 360.
This, you're so cheap, like, you know, sort of your average SD card these days. I mean,
you know, they also added the move feature, which is so nice. Mm-hmm. It's because before you had to copy and then delete, and now you just move it We're now up to Windows 3.1 capability with with file management on the Wii. But God, it's so much nicer. I mean, it's just so much easier to deal with all this stuff. It's fast and it's convenient. It has the features that you would want. And the one kind of hidden feature is this thing where if you never really have to clean out your fridge anymore, because now when you go to the shop channel, if you don't have room on your system memory, you can just download it to the SD card. So that's kind of where the whole fridge cleaning thing came up, right?
Yeah, because if you just wanted to download it,
before you had to back all the way out and go through the rigmarole and then go back to the shop channel again and try to repurchase it. And now you could just go straight to the SD card. But if you're using the SD card menu and you don't have enough space on your internal memory to create the swap file, it'll actually automatically clean your fridge for you.
Oh, yep.
Which is crazy.
The space, yeah.
Yeah, and I haven't tried this myself just because I didn't need to. I had enough space that this didn't happen, but I've seen video of it and it's pretty wild. I mean, it even gives you like different ways to sort through. It'll automatically clean channels off of your internal memory in order to free up enough space to play what you want to play.
Yeah, it works like
a charm.
And
of course, it's moving those things to the SD card anyway, which means you can then go play them later very conveniently on the SD card menu anyway. So it's not like it's deleting things, really.
Yeah,
it's just moving them over.
Yeah, if you don't have enough room, it brings up an auto manage menu, and you can do it by, I think you can select what's rightmost on the on your Wii channel list. I'm not too sure exactly how it looks at it, vertically or horizontally or what, but and you can do it by whatever has the most blocks, whatever is using the most blocks, and so it picks like the top two or three, and you can do it by what's using the most by using the fewest blocks. So when I did that on mine, because you know I have a ton of NES games on my Wii, it listed about 30 games. And but the thing is though, that's amazing because you don't have to sit there and copy one by one by one by one by one.
Yeah,
so you can kind of group copy
process.
So it's really good.
Yeah, it's a really nice feature. So basically, it seems like it answers almost every request that people had in terms of the Wii being able to use the SD card, in terms of the storage problem being fixed, in terms of usability, convenience, things like that. So my question for you guys is, I know John and Greg were particularly reticent to purchase things because of their size. And do you think this will change your purchasing habits from the shop channel?
Absolutely, yeah. And also the fact, and also not only that, but also the fact that you can manage it a lot easier. I mean, space isn't really an issue. All I have to do is just keep enough space open on the Wii for the biggest game that I have. That's pretty much it.
And doesn't it seem like that's going to be really easy now that you don't really need to have all your games on the internal memory anyway?
Yeah.
So it's like, what do you really have left on the internal memory? Like, I have a ton of blocks open now on the Wii, but just because I moved everything over.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. There's not particularly like that much of an advantage to have it, you know, like to have it on the internal memory anyway. So
Yeah, exactly.
It changes. It does change. It puts more things in play. Let's say, you know, in terms of what could be.
Yeah, purchased. I mean, I definitely plan to go in the next couple of days and have a ceremonial final fridge cleaning, where I will clean everything off of the Wii, perhaps light a couple of candles.
But you can use the new Move feature, so it'll be easier.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's exactly it. So it'll be a big deal.
Champagne.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you know? Johnny, you would say there was one kind of minor annoyance in the sense that, as you said, it takes about some period of time to load up the SD channel, and then you'll play something, and then it's like you normally when you play a Virtual Console game, you're done. You press the menu home button, and then like press Wii menu to jump back out to the Wii menu. But what you can't
do, because that way it suspends for you.
Yeah, but what you can't apparently do is do that, but just jump to the SD menu, so you don't have to reload the whole thing again.
That's true.
Right.
That's the one.
If you just
wanted
to jump out of one Virtual Console game and go to another, but all within the SD, it does bump you out to the Wii menu, and so then you would have to go back into the SD channel.
Correct.
Right. And that's actually the reason. That's why I put my Wii Fit channel, which I use pretty much every day, because that way you can weigh in without having the disc in.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, which is
it's the only game. It's the only like disc download kind of, you know what I mean by that. It's the only disc game channel that I use. I don't Mario Kart. I don't need or whatever. But so I kept that on my internal system memory because I want to be able to load it up really quickly, do my test, end it prematurely or whatever. I don't go through the whole stability and blah, blah, blah. I just want to get the little footprint and get out of there. And so that way I can kind of do all this, because I do it first thing in the morning. I'm half asleep. I just want to get in there quick, do it, get out so I can go eat breakfast. Yeah. So,
well, that's the thing. I mean, they could probably, you know, if they've got, we know, Nintendo likes this, daily kind of concept with games. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've seen with Brain Training, and I think they put it in, Puzzle League and all sorts of stuff. If they could have, more little daily stuff related to games that have these little channels that sort of install to your Wii, it's more palatable now to actually keep them around, because those are the ones that you can keep on your internal storage, and while, you know, you've got your vault of virtual console games on an SD card.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is going to make me play more virtual console and WiiWare stuff, and play things that I downloaded 2 years ago and forgot that I even had paid for it at some point. You
yeah, because if it's not
now,
there,
I can pretty much
visible.
Just keep a complete library, you know, and have it actually at hand and available. I do wish there was a way to sort of auto-sort the SD card menu, because it's getting a little chaotic. You know, I'm up to, the third page, and I'm still re-downloading things.
And what was it, was it, there's 240 slots, I think, which is
and
plenty.
Just it just seems like you should be able to sort it by system or something like that.
I agree.
I'm sure you could do it. I mean, but maybe they'll iterate on it, you know. I mean,
yeah, that could be a future update. But as it is, the SD card menu is just manual sorting. You know, you just pinch it you do a channel.
Yeah, just like a Wii menu.
Yeah, so you're going to have to manually put them in the order that you want, or either that or just keep paging through. So.
Yeah, I mean, I always put mine in the order I want. It's just ridiculous. It takes me a while. I'm like, copy
get
over.
Get all eight, you know, OCD on it.
Yeah, I'm so OCD with mine. I'm like, NES, ooh, that game released before that one. Can't have that.
I've got systems running along column and genre by row. And
oh, dear God.
I sit there for hours. It's a game unto itself. It's awesome.
Dude, I used to amuse myself quite a bit doing that on the Wii system menu, you know.
This
trying
is
to
back when you was playing Line Rider on the
exactly. Let
on
me
the
put
browser.
Down Line
it was
Rider.
Like, it was one or the other. That was all there was.
It's amazing. I can watch YouTube on my TV. Oh my God! Hours of fun. So moving on. I think we're all really happy about
it. Oh yeah.
You would say,
oh,
if you absolutely haven't downloaded this update yet, dear God, go do it. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't bought an SD card, dear God, go do it, because it really opens up the whole virtual console WiiWare thing and makes it fun. it actually lets you enjoy these games.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, if you only have two virtual console games, you're not going to care, you know.
No.
But if you own more than 10,
this is a godsend.
You want to use
this. I'm kind of in that camp of not owning a whole lot of virtual console games, because I don't.
But like I said, I mean, like WiiWare, you know, because you'll fill up your system so much quicker with WiiWare than you would buying a bunch of NES games, or even Super NES. I mean, what? Super NES games are 30-odd blocks, right?
So yeah, they're not
that
big.
That is what most WiiWare games are significantly bigger than that. You know, so
10 times that size.
Yeah, exactly. So the real big ones, they top out at that end. So, and there's so few N64 games anyway. The main way that you would really, really fill it, unless you're buying a lot of games, would be WiiWare. And that's the thing, is that, you know, hopefully the service is going to go from strength to strength. And if it does, you know, this is what you need. And they've provided it to us. So, you know, I'm hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So James, now you can finally fit Cocoteau Fishing Master.
Yeah, that was 290 blocks.
Now you have
no excuse. I mean, clearly the game.
Now
is...
you really don't have to care how many blocks it is.
Yeah, Cocoteau.
Okay, so Final Fantasy is coming to Wii, sort of, and a lot of weird stuff. So
myriad forms. Yeah.
For WiiWare, Final Fantasy IV: The After Years is coming to WiiWare in North America. This is kind of the epilogue or the follow-up to Final Fantasy IV, and I'm fucking pumped. I mean, I've been wanting to play this for years since it came out on cell phones in Japan. We kind of thought it was coming to WiiWare, but there was still a big question of if it was going to get localized, and it looks
it is. Because obviously, going to Japanese WiiWare, well, that clearly makes plenty of sense that'll happen. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so we got the word that they're actually going to localize it. So yeah, that's pretty cool, because I'm going to play 4 now. So
yeah,
that's nice to know that I'll be able to follow up pretty sharpishly, maybe.
Yeah, and you know, I'm a big fan of 4, so just the chance to finally get to play this is pretty exciting to me. And it's, I'm sure it'll be cheap, you know, $10 or whatever is like, that's awesome for a sort of semi-sequel to Final Fantasy IV that I've never played before. I mean, that's just, I'm thrilled. There's also, for James, there's a new Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles My Life as a Dark Lord.
That's right, which,
is
which
the
sounds
sequel
awesome.
To My Life
what
as a King.
Do you reckon your relationship with your little chancellor person's going to be like this time, James?
Well, I don't think you have one. I think it's your job to fuck up the little chancellor's person's career.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Do you think you're going to be running a dungeon here, or what?
That could actually be kind of cool. So if you're
like
running,
Dungeon Master?
If you're running the opposite of what you're doing in the game, where mm-hmm. in the other game, whereas you're running a town whose job it is to exterminate these dungeons, mm-hmm. on the flip side, you'd be running these dungeons whose people are leaving the dungeons to exterminate this town.
Yeah, so maybe you'll just see everything from the complete opposite perspective. So now the dungeons are all in 3D and you have characters running around, but the towns that they go ransack, you just kind of get reports on them. You never see them.
Yeah.
It'd be really interesting if they could link these up and kind of give you like a duplex mode
where
if you have both games downloaded.
Put them together, I would say you definitely have a disc release quality game, because I do feel like there's sufficient depth in either game.
Mm. I also wonder if this is going to compete with Overlord on Wii, because it seems like maybe it'll be a similar thing. No, we don't. I mean, you're just speculating.
It could be completely driven by Excel spreadsheets for all we know.
This is the first WiiWare sequel. Been announced. So I mean,
yeah,
because
I mean, they've always
well
talked about Lost Winds 2 and stuff like that, but it hasn't happened yet. So
but yeah, which one's better?
They haven't officially announced it. So yeah, now you can buy all the bikini packs you want, James, and they'll all fit on your SD card.
They're all gonna be like, you know, dominatrix stuff now or something.
Now you can get bikinis with spikes because they're evil.
Yeah,
they already had bikinis with bells. I'm good.
Yeah.
Studs.
That's right. Greg knows how I like my women.
I think far more surprising part of this Final Fantasy thing is that Final Fantasy is coming to Virtual Console.
Yes, that was the one I was reading the review of the
press. Kind of shocking.
Went, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I think the biggest surprise is just that, so in Japan, they're going to go 1 through 6, however long it will
take. Including ones that have already come out on the DS.
Yeah, but the real shock is that, you know, something like 6, which you might think maybe they'll be lining up for a DS remake or something, you know, they're quite happy to put it maybe on Virtual Console first.
Well, but I think they can totally get away with that just because the DS remakes of 3 and 4 have already been so dramatically different that people will be willing
not
to pay.
Like, it's not like the GBA ones, is it? Which were kind of just trying to be the Super NES
really,
version.
Yeah. Really ports. With an extra dungeon at most, and so I think, you know, I would totally download Final Fantasy VI on Virtual Console and then buy a DS version that's totally remade with voices and 3D graphics and everything. I would do that, and there's plenty of Japanese people who would do that.
Do you think this means possibly that they'll give like Chrono Trigger some breathing room and then put that on the Virtual Console as well?
Now that I don't know, because it's really, the remake is so much less ambitious of Chrono Trigger.
It's so close, I know, but that's what I'm saying. Do you think
it's
they might
port.
The point is you've got like remakes on GBA, not that old. Final Fantasy 6, it came out in 2007. It's not that much older than the Chrono Trigger. I'm just saying, maybe a couple, you know, give it a couple of years of breathing space and then
maybe
they'll do it.
The late part of the Wii lifetime, I think they could.
I think you would have to reach the point though where they're no longer really selling the DS game.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But I mean, not everything on the DS has like crazy legs.
Come on, how many reorders of Chrono Trigger are they going to have? I mean, it didn't even sell that well in the beginning. That's the funny thing. These big marquee. I mean, we get excited about things like FF4 and Chrono Trigger and Dragon Quest 4 and 5 coming out on DS, but they don't sell that well in America.
No,
they're not hitting the NPD even in the top 20.
They're pretty nichey.
When I was at GameStop yesterday, I was actually there killing time. That's how I ended up with GTA. Is all those games were on a small rack by themselves near the door in the top three rows. All those Square Enix games.
Mm-hmm.
However, the row at eye level and maybe two rows below eye level were things like Abby Finds a Way, American Girls games, and two different games about being a horse veterinarian.
Was there a Z on the end?
Lead us down that path. Two, to get back to Final Fantasy, for North America, the Virtual Console stuff, it is coming, but basically Iwata said the ones that were originally released in America are coming.
Yeah, so you'll be getting those localizations, you know, obviously, and the ones that were localized. It's no surprise, we're not going to get new localizations for Virtual Console, so...
So this is something for the completists, really, right? You know,
well, I don't know what you mean by that. I mean,
people that don't really care about having the newest version of it on the DS.
I think, you know, if you played Final Fantasy 1 back in the, you know, back in 90 and or 91, and you have fond memories of it, like, it's a very nostalgic thing to pick up, and for $5, it's an amazing game. It's an amazing value for $5. I think it's wonderful. But I'm, you know, more interested in 6, just because...
Yeah, because, we talked about this last week, in terms that, the music is definitely better than the GBA one.
Yeah, and the localization of 6 is totally fine. The one for 4 is a bit janky. The original English version of 4 is a bit, you know, I'm glad that they've redone it now. But by 6, you know, 6 came out around the time of Secret of Evermore and stuff like that. And Square USA at the time, they were kind of getting the hang of these localizations, and they were starting to put a little more effort into them.
Right.
So I think 6 is actually a pretty good localization. I'm not saying it couldn't be improved. I don't know how accurate it is to the Japanese, but it's good.
Does 6 have any of those weird instances that we remember? I can't think of any right off.
No, it doesn't have anything like you Spoonie Bard and, you know, like all
like
these
that.
English moments and like ridiculous things. They didn't really have to truncate a bunch of people's names. It's just a more sophisticated system than 4. And
they aren't alone in that respect either. I think that was an industry-wide move at that point.
Oh, yeah, dude. So, anyway, yeah, Final Fantasy coming to Virtual Console. I mean, the pigs have flown. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, I guess Square decided that they like to make money.
We already knew that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I have no idea why they didn't do this in the first place. It's pretty funny.
No, they're just spreading it out.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah, they wanted to be platform independent, I think.
Yeah, and they're getting more into the digital distribution thing. You know, they're supporting WiiWare. Including these. If Crystal Defenders does come out on WiiWare this year, it'll have been their fourth WiiWare title. That's pretty strong support from Square.
That might make
Square
them one
Enix.
Of the top developers.
Yeah, so I think it makes sense to bolster that with Virtual Console stuff. You know, Hudson is doing this a lot, where they're kind of doing both. You know, just this week they had their new WiiWare game, and they had two import Virtual Console games, and it was just kind of Hudson week. So if you're a big Hudson fan, I guess they're actually Aaron Kluska's
like
big Hudson fan. So so it just makes sense if you're supporting one to support
need,
the other.
I don't know why they didn't support. What I'm saying is I don't know why they didn't support the Virtual Console first, because it would be incredibly cheap to do
like
so.
I mean, if you think about when the Virtual Console started at the end of 2006 or whatever, or early 2007, I mean, they were still doing the GBA ports. Yeah, that was still like 5 had just come out, 6 was coming out, hadn't even come out yet. I mean, it was a different time.
Yeah, you're right.
Anti-way Final Fantasy, nice. Virtual Console Arcade. This totally came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
nobody was expecting this.
He really is like, hey, what?
Iwata's like, we're doing arcade games on Virtual Console, and you can buy them right now.
Yeah,
and
that was the closest thing you'll ever get to the Saturn moment.
Yeah,
I think it was more like an Apple thing.
Yeah,
you know?
That's the way Nintendo look at it, obviously, because they have this sort of spiritual affinity with Apple or whatever, but that's not how I'm looking at it.
And by the way, if you had your Wii Shop channel open right now, you'd notice they're already there.
You're already dead. So the initial lineup of games, there are a lot of it. There are 6 in Japan with a lot more announced already. In America, are these in Europe too, Greg?
Yeah, you know? the Europe's got them too.
Same
so
ones. Okay.
It was worldwide simultaneous. I mean, you know,
nice.
Everything,
okay.
Every element of it was.
Well, see, Nintendo can do something simultaneously. Too bad they'll never do it again.
It was a fucking good day for Nintendo. But so the initial lineup in the West is Gap Plus, which is a sequel to Galaga. Mappy from Namco, which is a piece of shit. Don't
buy it right now.
Now, to be fair, I played the NES version a long, long, long time ago, but it was ass really bad. Yeah. So maybe the arcade version is better, but it was one of the first games where I turned a critical eye to it. You know, I was like 5-6 years old, and I just remember thinking, this sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So, mappy. Ugh. There's also Star Force, which is a vertical arcade shooter, and if you've played Retro Game Challenge, I'm pretty sure this was the inspiration for Star Prince in Retro Game Challenge, because
a lot of this stuff is from like Namco, right? And of course they created Game Center CX or whatever in Japan, which is what Retro Game Challenge is based on.
Yeah, so. Because like the first two like Robot Ninja Hagelman games are sort of improved versions of Mappy, actually. They're actually fun to play, so they're actually much better than Mappy, but the game design is quite similar. It's kind of pre-Mario platforming kind of stuff, you know? And then, of course, Namco did Galaga, and that's where the Cosmic Gate stuff comes in. So, yeah, a lot of that is heavily based. Anyway, the fourth Virtual Console arcade game is Tower of Draga, and that's like a maze, kind of an old Pac-Man-style maze game. I don't know that much about it. But has anyone other than me downloaded any of these?
Nope.
No, I don't. So Namco announced this huge raft of like 30 games for it in Japan already, and there's some that are kind of intriguing on there, like quite a few that have versions on the Virtual Console already, but they would be superior. So if you haven't bought them yet, like Splatterhouse, remember that?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
I don't know whether like the Japanese arcade version is like so uncensored that it's basically like hostile.
Fantastic.
We'll see.
it makes sense that Namco would jump on this pretty quick, because Namco, above any other company I can think of, is so eager to cash in on their arcade history. If you think about all the Namco Museum versions for every single system, they've already done this on every system. Including, I think there's even a Wii version of Namco Museum, which is all arcade stuff. But, you know, being able to pick and choose and maybe get some import stuff. I think Gap Plus is an import arcade game because it's 600 points while the others are 500.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that's because it was Japan only before now.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
I've never seen a Gap Plus arcade game.
You know what?
I
think that's 500 here for some reason. So maybe it was in Japan and Europe, but not in North America or something weird. I don't know. Because they're definitely all 500, the first four. In Europe.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Weird. Yeah. Well, Gap Plus is most definitely 600 because I bought it today.
No. I've seen it too. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. But just in the interest of talking about one of these games, I did get Gap Plus because I'm a big Galaga fan. I totally kick ass in the arcade of the Galaga, and the game itself is very much like Galaga. It's kind of a minor evolution of that. There's some interesting differences. It's much more difficult. It ramps up in difficulty really right away. You know, like in Galaga, you have to play through 4 or 5 levels before the enemies start kind of ramming down towards you on the incoming flights.
That's what she said.
You know, at the very beginning of the level. Because at first, it's more like target practice for the first few levels. And then eventually, you get to like level 10, and they start dropping missiles at you as they do that as well. So some of them are ramming you, some of them are dropping missiles. You really have to be on your toes. Well, in this, the first level, they're already attacking you right off the bat. So it gets hard much faster. And then the challenging levels have this weird mechanic where you're juggling the enemies after you shoot them. So you shoot them, and then they start falling towards you out of control, and then you shoot them, and they bounce up again. And basically, you try to keep juggling these guys as long as you can to get a good score. It's really weird. But the game itself is pretty much what I expected. It's good. If you like Galaga, you should get it, especially since the only other version you can get is the NES version of Galaga on Virtual Console, which is a bad version.
Yeah, and then
you've
got, like, Galaga 88, which is, like, quite different, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, like, you know, I don't have that one. I probably should.
That's on the Virtual Console for sure.
I think it's TurboGrafx.
It's a Turbo game. Yeah. And apparently it's pretty good and kind of similar to Space Invaders Extreme.
Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty good. Well, I remember I got it back in the day for TurboGrafx 16.
I do kind of hope that we get like the proper version of Donkey Kong would be quite cool, because the NES version is kind of buggered up, isn't it? It hasn't got like one of the levels.
And
It's missing one level.
So, I think they put the arcade version with DK64 as an unlockable.
They did, yes.
Yeah.
But other than that, it hasn't got a lot of play, so that'd be nice, because it's such a big piece of Nintendo history.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see if Nintendo themselves release their arcade games, because they have, you know, there's the arcade exclusive version of Super Mario Brothers where the levels are different.
Yeah.
So there's some weird stuff when you go back through the history of Nintendo. They did make arcade games, and some of them didn't come to NES, or they were so severely altered that, you know, it might
arcade
actually be
arcade Punch Out? Any chance? I mean, that'd be kind of interesting, like, see how different it was or not.
But anyway, the reason I wanted to bring up the fact that I downloaded Gapless is that I was very surprised that they've actually built a shell around these arcade games. So when you launch a Virtual Console arcade game, it doesn't just go to the start screen of the game. It goes to the shell where you can reconfigure the button layout, you know, because these were never meant to be played with home console controllers. So you can configure the button layout however you want to. You can change the dip switches to, like, change the number of lives that you start out with, or the levels of the point values where you get extra lives. It's crazy.
That's very impressive. Then, yeah.
Yeah, and then you actually have controls for inserting coins. So you hold down plus and push 1 to insert a coin, and then you hold down plus and press 2 to actually start the game.
And I think they did something similar with that Konami arcade collection that they did on the DS.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've seen things like this before.
But it's nice that they've done it, you know, for this, because you just, like, you kind of just expect it to be just like Virtual Console.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's actually a slick little shell, and it gives you some things to play around with. So if you're, like, a really hardcore, you know, nostalgia kind of person for these old arcade games, then it's more, I guess it's more like MAME. You know, in that you do have all these options.
Yeah, now, what are the next games that they have coming out? I know, I saw they had Space Harrier. They were talking about Space Harrier coming
out. Yeah, Sega's on board.
They did mention that.
That's really cool. Sega's on board, yeah.
Yeah, I'll probably pick that up. I love that game. I was like,
well, not satisfied with the Master System version?
It's just not enough. There's just something missing. Like, graphics, gameplay, stuff like that.
It's pretty much the same thing.
It had the same name.
I wonder if Sega will get into releasing stuff like Virtual Fighter.
I'll tell you what, I think Strider would be good.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of people got about the Mega Drive conversion being, like, really good, and I guess it was impressive for the time, but I don't think it's, like, that accurate. So,
yeah, and the NES version's terrible.
Yeah,
and then Altered Beast, of course. I mean, like, can we not bring that up?
Because nobody wants to play that game.
Yeah, the arcade version is way better, apparently.
But it's still not a fun game.
I love it. So, screw you, man.
Yeah, there's tons of arcade games they could mine, for sure.
Man, I mean, this would be maybe a little extreme, but now that the SD card menu is up, maybe they increase the memory limits, and you could do F-Zero AX.
Ooh.
No way.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Oh, you get out of here. You hush your mouth.
I mean,
you hush your mouth, you know, Johnny.
John's going to reach through Skype and smack you.
That would be great.
That would be pretty sweet. They could pull that off. I would love that.
Same thing with the Mario Kart arcade. That'd be pretty cool.
No, yeah, I'm not sure if they should bother with it, but I've heard some pretty bad things about that. You know, there's also Rhythm Heaven Arcade,
yes,
which could easily run
which
on
is so
Wii.
Fundamentally different.
But
it's literally the GBA resolution blown up.
Rhythm Heaven Arcade is something you need to experience in person.
Yeah, that is its only value.
Yeah, but you have to realize, Greg, that that Rhythm Heaven, the GBA version, didn't come out in America.
Yeah, that's
It'd
true.
It'd be fundamentally easier to bring over the arcade version.
I think you'd be better
import.
Off putting it on DSiWare than on Virtual Console Arcade.
Well, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, the mind boggles. There's so many cool possibilities, and this
definitely.
Arcade thing, just it really was such a shock. I don't think anybody expected Nintendo
to do
that.
No, I mean,
you probably
would have backed them saying they were going to do handheld Virtual Console, like, because the DSi is coming out, like, really soon.
That's what I expected.
Rather than this, which is totally left field.
That was all I expected. I didn't expect there to be anything on the Wii discussed.
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah. Anyway, moving on, what do y'all think about the new Zelda for DS, Spirit Tracks?
What the fuck?
Meh.
Okay.
I like the idea. I think Phantom Hourglass definitely left some potential on the table.
Yeah.
In terms of ways that they could have used the core sort of engine and the gameplay and the controls that they developed for the DS. I thought there was plenty of stuff, mileage in that left that they could, do it better, different. And this is it. And it kind of, in some ways you might say, it seems kind of counterintuitive that it's like, wait a minute, so they're doing the sequel to the big franchise on DS that came out 16 months ago, not the one that came out 3 years ago, like New Super Mario Bros. And all that. But then Phantom Hourglass wasn't in the February MPD's top 10, was it? So
No. They
don't have to worry about cannibalizing the sales of the other game.
No, it still sold pretty well, though, didn't it, Phantom Hourglass?
I think it sold pretty well.
It sold very well in Japan compared to...
Relatively very well. But it's kind of run its course, so it's like, we can do a sequel, where it's like, with those others, it's like, no, we have to leave them be to do their precious work.
Yeah, it brings up a very good point. I mean, how Nintendo's going to look at stuff going forward. It's like, because so many of their titles kind of have this evergreen quality about them, it's
going to be like, I would like to make a sequel to this game, but I can't.
So what you didn't know is the fact that Galaxy sold well, but not astronomically, is actually fucking brilliant, because we might actually get another
one. Yeah, it means we'll get another one.
Plan.
Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
I'm a little with John in the med department for this, and it's not because I didn't like Phantom Hourglass. I definitely did like
it. I loved it.
I'm with Greg that I think there was some potential to do more things with it. But just watching the trailer, I was left thinking nothing in the trailer really grabbed me and made me think, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Well, let's break down what we saw in the trailer.
We saw Link become an Amtrak employee.
So you've got him like in his little conductor's outfit, which I suppose is ostensibly adorable.
Yeah, it is.
It's cute.
But it looks very analogous to using the boat in Phantom Hourglass.
In fact, it's you don't have to draw the path anymore, though.
You just pick what like railway line you're going to go on. But it's kind of similar, isn't it?
Because how do you guys know that? It looked to me like you probably draw the rail.
You saw the guy tap the route he was going to ride.
Well, maybe he drew them earlier.
You could see like a map screen with the rail network on it.
Yeah,
so,
you saw him tap the route.
I'm assuming it's pre-existing rather than like he magically lays it.
It's spirit tracks. I mean, it just sounds like you would draw the tracks yourself to me.
I think the term spirit tracks actually refers more to the core gameplay of how items are going to be interacted with. I think
it refers to the, to the like glowing yellow shit stains in his pants.
I think it's perfectly feasible that maybe you do draw stuff at some point, and then it really would be very, very analogous to the boat, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I really would be the same,
because you still shoot the cannonballs and all that, it's very, very similar, but just, moving it on land. But I guess, do you think that means that, again, it's not really going to have an overworld in the traditional sense of Zelda game? Phantom Hourglass is very sort of compartmentalized and broken up, and then you just sailed in between. And then, with this, you're just going to take the train, and the fact that it's set on land is kind of trivially different.
I do expect that, yes. Which is a little disappointing for me.
I don't think so. I actually think we're going to get something more significantly different than that.
It'd be interesting.
Structurally. But I mean, in terms of, like, the other big thing in the trailer was this whole idea of, like, actually commanding
enemy characters. I think the spirit tracks comes from more.
No, that's just a very obvious adaptation of the rod of control or whatever from Twilight Princess, and you're
and
just
also,
applying
of course,
that to
when
DS.
when you played the multiplayer mode and you took turns, and one of you was Link and one of you had to command the three guards. Mm. So it's very sort of similar sort of thing. You command them in the same way. In this,
right, you're just putting that in the single player now.
But yeah, and what you can do is, like, it looks like, number one, it can be used in puzzles in terms of, like, your little guard guy could, like, walk through like fire and go and sort of pull a switch off, so you can.
Well, that just goes back to Wind Waker, where you're controlling the little statue guy with your it's been done before. It's not amazing.
You can kind of, and then it shows a bit where you kind of like sort of assign it to attack an enemy, and so like while the enemy's fighting yours a little guard, you can go and attack its back, which is exposed. And so I mean, I guess the question is going to be whether like it's got this kind of broad base applicability that those specific items from previous Zelda games didn't have, that will somehow make it more interesting.
See, what I feel like is
from watching the trailer, we're dealing with the game with where its premise is going to be on not controlling what Link does, but Link controlling what everyone else does, if that makes sense.
I don't know. The other item that they showed... To me, the statue thing just looks like a dungeon
The
item.
Other item's the gust, like kind is of the a... gust boomerang, but you actually draw its path.
No, that wasn't the... It wasn't a gust boomerang. It was just kind of this windmill made of leaves that Link was holding, and you just kind of point it.
Well, it behaved like the gust... Like the gust boomerang.
It seemed like it could maybe a bit like the gust jar from Minish Cap, but like
yeah,
it could kind
of
blow out as well. And, yeah, mm-hmm. So, I mean, but that's... I guess the point is, like, I made this point on a previous episode, that a lot of the items in Phantom Hourglass were just items you'd had in Zelda before, but of course done in a different way because it was with the touchscreen and stuff. Bomb chews, the bow and arrow, the grappling hook, you know, it was, whereas maybe this time, you know, they'll branch out a bit, so it's not just like, oh, neat, you know, it's this thing that you're familiar with, but it's kind of different, and really do things that are genuinely unique and has some really interesting gameplay applications.
Well, Spirit Tracks is supposed to come out later in 2009, and yeah, I'm sure we'll hear more about it at E3.
That's not happening.
We'll see.
You probably will.
Why not, man? I mean, the whole engine's done.
They're too careful about these things these days. You know, the days of the
days of the two-year delay.
Although, I say that, and then here we are, and they still haven't talked about when Wii Sports Resort is actually coming out, so maybe they've just stepped in it there, because...
We've heard that might be a hardware issue with Motion
It could
Plus,
be, yeah, so. And of course, that would not apply to something like Spirit Tracks or any other sort of pure software thing, but it is very interesting that this was, you know, explicitly, if I remember correctly, a spring title, and here we are, in March, at the end of March, coming into April.
Spring just started.
But we don't know when it's coming out yet. I'm not saying it should have already come out, but we should have a date.
I think Resort will look a lot different the next time we see it. I think they're doing some pretty dramatic things to it.
There were so many games that we hadn't seen. Like, they've only showed 3.
Yeah.
And presumably, didn't they say it was going to be like 10 or something?
Yeah,
so
10 or 12.
There's a lot. There was a lot of stuff to do, left to do.
Okay, well, moving on from Zelda, a couple other sort of minor things that were part of the keynote or at least part of GDC. Iwata showed a WiiWare game called Rock and Roll Climber that uses the balance board.
Yeah,
this was previously announced at a retail summit in Japan, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's definitely
known
about.
I had heard of this before.
Yeah, I think it's been rated as well.
Yeah, this does kind of indicate that it's coming to North America if he actually showed it. And I think it's Nintendo published. It's developed by Vitae Games or something. It's not really first party. It looks like it might be cool.
And of course, it is using the balance board. So, you know, there's not that many games that use it, even though we talk about the size of the install base now that, like, Wii Fit has surpassed Halo 3.
15 million balance boards.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big sort of platform, but there's not that much. Sean White obviously mentioned
and
got...
the Wii just hit 50 million, so think about that.
Yeah.
It's a good proportion.
It really is, isn't it?
It's
impressive.
Very good, especially for the price.
Yeah.
For
half the price of the Wii, or a third of the price of the Wii.
Yeah.
I think Greg has a good point. Considering 15 million balance boards out there, there aren't that many games you can play with it.
Yeah, so maybe this is something that we'll see more from Nintendo, you know, pushing stuff like that with the... Yeah, you know, like, I think we'll see Wii Motion Plus WiiWare quite a lot as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we've heard these things that Nintendo has a policy that, like, you can't have a retail game that requires the balance board unless it packs in with it, you know, because they don't want to confuse people they don't want people to buy a game and then go home and find out that they don't have the controller to play it. So that's why you have all these Wii games that have optional balance board modes.
Yeah.
But maybe... with WiiWare, and I don't know if this is the case with Rock and Roll Climber, but maybe they're starting to look at WiiWare as, you know, we can do more niche, more specific things with WiiWare because it's easier to explain at the point of purchase because Nintendo controls the message. And so maybe they're starting to say, well, you know, maybe you can have a balance board only WiiWare game.
Thing is, you have to think, though, with 15 million out there, won't there come a point where they're like, you know what, you can make games, there's so many out there, you don't have to have it as a pack-in?
Yeah, I think that policy is temporary.
Well, I mean,
the other thing is it's great policy for Nintendo because it means you can't really compete with Wii Fit. You can't really sell your own third-party version of Wii Fit.
Yeah, if you want a balance board, like, you know, you got to go get that.
Exactly. So it kind of monopolizes the whole Wii Fit market for them. I mean, you've got EA making their own now, but again, the Bounce Board is only just like a kind of a small portion of that.
Well, yeah, it becomes another Wii Play scenario where people are, you know, people, if they want that piece of, if they want that peripheral, well, you got to buy Wii Fit. And of course you will, because, you know, why not? It's a good game, you know?
I think in the case of Wii Fit, the desire for the game and the desire for the hardware are a lot more balanced. I think they're pretty much equal.
Yeah, they're kind of, in many cases, kind of one and the same, aren't they, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they think of the Bounce Board is Wii Fit.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's the main problem, is changing that perception. And people like, it's like the initial perception was, oh, you can play things other than bowling with your Wii. And then, you know, now the perception is, oh, you can do things other than Wii Fit with your Balance Board.
Yeah,
these things happen over time, you know. So anyway, the last bit of news we have here before we wrap up the show is that through some kind of sessions, comments at sessions and things, basically Level 5 have confirmed that there's going to be another Professor Layton outside of Japan. So, as you know, recently they announced the 4th, 5th, and 6th Professor Layton games for Japan.
I like that they feel the need to announce them in huge blocks versus individual.
Yeah, just planning ahead. Well, don't mind us.
Yeah. It shows that they put amount of passion and resolve into each title.
So
we are not going to churn these out at all. We'll be doing that.
By the way, we're announcing
one
numbers 4 through 18. These are going to be each individual works of love.
Yeah.
That's what Square Enix does with Final Fantasy at this point. They kind of announce 5 games at the same time. But anyway, Professor Layton, there is a second Professor Layton coming to English speakers. So
yep. No. That's good. I think he said that they kind of intend to do them all, essentially. But
the thing, I'm not sure that's feasible, because even in the very first Professor Layton and the Curious Village, they had to sort of, from what I've heard, they, you know, because some of the puzzles in Professor Layton were very Japanese centric and there really was no way to localize them. What they did was they kind of took puzzles from the first one, and then they had, once they took out all the Japanesey ones that they couldn't really bring over, they filled those in with puzzles from the second and third games that were already out in Japan. So that's why they couldn't just bring them over one by one.
Yeah,
you know.
This is you know, especially when you consider like the narrative stuff and all that. I'm sure localizing it is quite a task.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, I think maybe, you know, they'll just have to like keep sort of jigging things around or whatever, because I guess the main thing is just bringing all the different stories. I guess is their sort of option.
Right. Yeah.
And the story's good.
And
I
assume it will be subject to commercial performance, but I mean, certainly in Europe, where it took a very long time to come out, is at this point a runaway success. It's just kind of crazy. I mean, it's been out since November, I think, and it's regularly in the top 5 of the all formats chart. I mean, it's you know, sort of, it obviously hasn't done it over the period of time, so you can't really say this, but it's on a sort of brain training type path of sort of perennial success.
Yeah. There may be a resurgence in America as well for Professor Layton, because Nintendo just made a new commercial with My Secret Girlfriend Liv Tyler playing Professor Layton.
Congratulations, Johnny.
They're pushing they're going to push Rhythm Heaven with Beyonce, apparently.
Yeah, that's great. Nice. I mean, she's a musician. That's the most sensible celebrity thing they've done yet.
I think they need to pitch them all with Terrell Owens. Oh.
I think he'd be perfect. He's an inspiration.
Touchdown originator.
He's actually going to be doing Picross 3D.
Perfect. Yeah.
Just keeps doing it, then it turns out it's Tony Romo's head underneath.
You just have him drop the DS every one out of three times.
Most times in the league. It's my teammate. My quarterback.
All right. Well, anyway, Professor Layton, there you go. More coming. That's the end of the show. Thanks for sticking with us, and I hope you enjoy GDC as much as we have so far. I guess on the site, by the time you hear this, hopefully we'll have some impressions of like Excitebots and Punch-Out, because those are playable at the show. None of us are at the show, so we can't talk about them, but...
We can talk, but it's not really coming from an area of knowledge.
Right.
Excitebots plays like shit. There, see? I can talk.
IGN loved it. They played it last week and fucking loved it. So I'm, of course, you know, anyway, it's IGN. But I'm excited about Excitebots. So anyway, that's the show. Thanks for listening, and thanks to the crew for being here. Yeah. Thanks to Greg for editing every week. That's a big job.
It is.
That's going to do it for us. Talk to you next week. Bye.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Doesn't really feel like it's a complete experience the way it's all put together.
The original 1080p, though, was kind of a revolutionary game. You know, it was
1080p is a resolution of television.
Sorry, 1080 snowboarding. Sorry, God.
Yeah. That is a bizarre Freudian slip. That is a bizarre Freudian. It was just like looking at a catalog with like some incredible new TV set, and it's like, ooh.